Christ, everybody in the country. His dad knew about that.
Well, what was the story the way you heard it?
Well, you just heard that he wrote back to Minnesota and told him about when he drove into Troy with the hack, when he crossed the Spring Valley Creek there, the fish were thick, that he got his hack full. Fish. That's all I heard. I heard that when I was a kid.
I heard one other one. He used to say, they asked him about the hills, and they said, well, it's hilly out there, isn't it? Because it's flat in Minnesota. And he said, well, but all the hills run down, so there is no trouble with that.
Yeah, they run down and we go coasting, but it isn't same coming back up.
What about Magnuson and Johansson, those two brothers? What do you remember about them? I heard they did a lot of things alike.
Well, I'll tell you, they lived up here north. You know where Todd Gippard lives? Well, they live north. Well, Hunt owns the land. Hunt owns the land back there.
Do you remember them doing a lot of things together in the old days?
All the thing you'd see, all I know is you see them in town together. And when they had a corn cob pipe and one light, the pipe the other one fill up, and they both light the same way. Then I see him in church. They went to church steady, so we seen him in church every Sunday.
I heard that they...
That's all I know. They really got along well. They were just a pair, boy. When the first one died, he passed away in the seat during the sermon in the church over here. See that that hall down there by the park? Well, that's the old Nora Church. That used to be, you know, Eddie Swanson. You leave Eddie's and go up a little hill and then around the curve.
Yeah.
Well, right in on Toon's Field there, that's where the church sat, and they moved from there to Troy.
That was the church everybody went to?
Yeah, that's where everybody went to. Mm-hmm.
So he died in the middle of a sermon, eh?
Mm-hmm. And his brother, he got his plumb lost from there. That was Magnus that died in church.
I've seen their graves right, you know, next to each other in the cemetery.
Mm-hmm.
I'd heard from Carl, he said that they sold their place, you know, and then they were really sorry, and they went back to it almost every day to look at it a lot of time. They had to go back and see it, and finally they got it back again.
Oh?
That's what he said.
Oh? I didn't know anything about that. Huh? I know that after Magnus died, then towards the last young, he lived in I believe it was down here in Mandel's rest home. Right next to Nazarene Church there, where they tore that old building down. That's where he was the last. Mm-hmm.
This guy that I said before was, you didn't know him, I think I said his name was Wild Bill, but what I've heard is that his name is Wild Davy, and that he wore a buckskin jacket around the country a lot. Do you remember anything
Wild
about
Davy?
Him?
I'll tell you, that was before my time. Mm-hmm. Or if I was, I guess I was born, but I was just a little kid. I don't even remember seeing him. I used to what I heard about him.
What did you hear about him? That there was a guy.
Well, he lived. He had a dugout, something like that old hermit head down here on Berkeley, this side of Kendrick. And he had a dugout in the rocky side hill over there in the Bull Creek Canyon.
Did you hear he had a lot of dogs?
A lot of dogs, yeah. Mm-hmm. He had a lot of dogs all the time.
Did you hear anything else about him, like what he used
to do?
No,
the only thing you should have heard, you know, they said he'd always had a pine squirrel tail and a hawk feather in his hat, and always had a white-brimmed hat.
Huh.
My half-brother, he knew him, seen him. He didn't know him, but he seen him. It's too bad, like some of them old, like old Alfred Matson, if he be living on.
Oh, I...
He always come over there when he come Bull Creek. He'd stop there going and stop there after come back from Troy. Or Moscow did go then. no toys to do a mortgage trading, and then you always stay overnight over there.
You stay overnight on Boulder Creek?
No, over here on the Matson.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, Archibald's place now.
Oh, you mean Davywood?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Or Dave. Yeah.
Did, see, I heard...
Carl, I bet you Carl, he's older. Carl should remember.
He remembered a little bit about him. He told me, he was the first guy that told me about him. He said he used to, that the, he said he was a great hunter. While Davy did, he liked to shoot
well,
the bull.
Now, like Joe Bjorklund should know about him because he had come by there when he went from Boulder Creek to Moscow.
Did you ever hear about this, there was a miner who lived on Boulder Creek or down around Park? I heard from a couple people, there was a sort of a foolish miner out there. He was a guy who dug around, he dug a lot of holes and didn't ever get anything, but you never heard of him, eh?
Yeah, no. No, I didn't know if anybody prospecting down in there.
What about Marshall Hayes? What have you heard about him?
Well, I'll tell you, there's another one that happened. I wasn't, because I could have been over 6 years old when he got killed.
Did you hear? Well, I know. I mean, a lot of these things like this, I mean, they're beyond most what most people are old enough to remember. I mean, everybody that was old enough to 15 or better or 20 in that time, they're mostly all dead. But I was wondering what you heard about what happened in that business.
Yes, I knew that he was copying Troy, and then at the slide, he shot him. I don't know what came up in between them. I don't know what that was about, the shooting was about.
Did you hear...
the one that Billy McGann, not Todd McGann, might know something from his dad there.
You think so?
Yeah, because Billy McGann, he was in the livery barn during the shooting. He ducked back in the livery barn. He used to drive a livery team for Jones down there. So... Billy McGann, he told me that he was there at the time. See, one was up the street and one was in the livery barn. And they had a big sign there on the corner, Inland Hotel. And that was taken down here, it can't be over 7 years ago. And I never looked till a while before Billy McGann died. He told me, well, see the bullet hole, you seen the bullet hole? No, I said it. And they seen the sign. There were 7 bullet holes shot up in that sign.
Really?
Shot that high.
Who was that? Was that
that
was
must
that
have
Sly?
Been Sly. Sly. That must have been Sly.
Well, see, I'd heard that Sly wanted to get Hayes' sons after he got Hayes. That Hayes' sons were going after Sly. And that's why the shooting. He was shooting down on the street. But
well, I don't know what the trouble was to come up about that. You smoke?
No, not hardly. But,
no. Before that, I know old Chuck Wells up here, the Negro. He tried to arrest him there in Troy, and Chuck wasn't drunk, and he'd get on his saddle horse to ride out of town. And he chased him clean to top the hill there where you go down in there to where them trailer house on the back road out there.
Yeah.
And kept a shooting at old Chuck Wells. Oh, not Chuck,
Joe
Wells, yeah. Kept shooting at him there till. Then he hollered back, he says, "Sir, it'll be my time next," he says. And next time you come, Troy, then Sly had shot him and says, "Old Joe said it was too bad." He says, "I don't want that chance." Because he figured on shooting him.
So Joe stood up to him, eh?
Huh?
Joe stood up to him.
Well, yeah, he stood up to him there till in town there, but then after he got his horse and started out, then he started shooting at him. And because what they said, then there was the storekeeper, I don't know, Larson or Olaf Olsen had the store there with the bus depot, and told him if he'd shot Joe Wells there, well, he'd have had it because he didn't have the right to shoot at him. When he's good enough to get on his horse and leave town. I'll tell you, I think it really was kind of, might have been a little, you know, over there right across where the depot is, them old houses back in there. That's nothing but cat houses. And old Yo used to go down there. Oh, he used to. So I just wonder if started over some drinking and brawl or something. I don't know, I never heard.
Well, here's my, have you ever heard of Joe fighting anybody?
Never. It was light around here. I'll tell you, if you'd have picked on Joe, you'd have had a bunch on you. Same with Chuck Wells. My God, I'll tell you, Chuck was a lot light in the woods. It was no use starting an argument with Chuck, or you'd have everybody else on you. He was just as, considered just as good as any best white man in there.
That's really good.
I worked around him, Christ. You could have, he was always he was just like that, always laughing, happy. Yeah, he was full of fun in the woods.
Did you ever meet Lou Wells, Joe's wife?
No, I seen her. I was with Dad. He's got to back the shop to injury. I seen an old lady, but that's all. Don't even remember her not much. No, she's kind of a skinny woman.
Arthur Burt, you know him?
Yeah.
He told me once, he said, Joe used to like to say, I like my whiskey, but Lou, she likes her tobacco.
Oh?
And he said she used to like to chew tobacco.
Oh?
Yeah.
She liked her tobacco.
In fact, he said she used to spit it through the knot holes through the, of the old log cabin. She was that good.
Yeah. No, I don't remember. I can't remember. Shucks, he started getting. He wasn't very dark, and the inside of his hands were plumb white.
Did Joe? He used to freight too. Some didn't he? I heard he used to haul stuff.
Well, he could have. He done logging, I think, up around there, around Erie.
You told me he was a really strong man, Joe.
Yeah, he was strong, and Chuck was stronger.
Stronger than Joe?
Oh boy, that was a man of his powerhouse, right? Used to keep him on the landing, rolling back in a skidding with horses, roll back or roll up the skidways. He had a hard time keep peavey handles for him.
This is Chuck now.
Yeah, he break the peavey handle. I know he. I heard about it. My brother-in-law worked up at Camp 14 for Frank Jean, and he's on the landing there. And big pine log, probably 3 feet and better than two. And he'd go rolling them logs and he'd break peavey handles. Yeah, Chuck was strong. I seen Chuck. Well, that was a powerhouse. Mm-hmm. Yeah, first I worked in the woods.
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
I met Chuck then. He was married then. His first wife, Mildred, the one that married Dan Ross. Mrs. Ross. She was Miss Ross when she died. That was his first wife.
Mm.
Yeah, them dairy people, they should know a lot about them.
About Joe.
Well, sir, yeah. Joe and the whole family married a daughter. Nigga married a Calder and her 2 children. They should know about them.
What about what you heard about Vollmer and the hard times in 93? Did you ever hear talk about Vollmer, the guy that the town of Troy was named before?
Yeah, Vollmer, that was the first town, you know.
Mm-hmm. What about the man? I heard he'd owned a lot of, or he got a lot of land in here during the, well, a lot of places.
He might have had a lot of land, but the first flour mill down at Driscoll's, that was Vollmer's milling company. And then after that, I don't know if it was Lewis, and he went down on the coast. But you see, at that time when Vollmer was, I wasn't even here.
Never even thought of you.
No, I was born in Vollmer, Idaho. It was still Volmer when I was born.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to ask you about the thrashing too, and about what that was like. You're telling me that the Olsons ran a real good thrashing operation, and I know Carl, you know, he would never just tell me that they did a real good job, because he wouldn't say that about himself. But you told me they did do really good work. Is that right?
You bet. Carl and Oscar. Carl was engineer and Oscar was superintendent. Boy, I'll tell you, if the grain could be thrashed and cleaned, Oscar could do it. And I'll tell you one. Another one was Albert. Died in Moscow, and Roberts had passed away in Troy. They had a thrashing outfit together. There was two other good thrashmen, but I say Oscar had everybody beaten. Like Emil said, there's none in the family could beat Oscar.
When you say that about how if it could be thrashed, Oscar would thrash it, you mean if it was dry enough or mm-hmm. what?
If it was dry enough and could be hauled, Oscar set the machine to do it. And he'd always check in the straw behind to on the shaft for 2 seasons, nothing's going over.
Did they work fast?
They worked fast. Oscar could set the machine so it'd take a lot of grain. He'd set his sieves and shaffer so that it would take it. Well, they try fast. Not like now when they're south on the ridges there. Well, I showed you that calendar of the colonoscopy, you know, all them sacks and that 10 hours trashing out there, four brothers. Mm-hmm. 1924. That was Oscar, was separated, man. And then he trained Emil with him, so Emil worked with him every year by help oil and 10 separator. And Emil, I'll tell you, is a good thrashman too.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Emil can thrash.
What kind of, did you work on a cruise up here at all?
Well,
did you work with them?
The only thing, you know, they come around here. Well, they need so many bundle team, the farmers go together and help each other out.
Right.
And that's how I worked with them.
Yeah. How, did you work from dawn till dark? Or how did it go?
Oh, they put in 12 hours.
Mm-hmm.
12 hours action. But that's as bad as, you know, some of them, they'd used to go like out in the Genesee country. There you trash an hour before breakfast and then trash till dark. Probably 14 hours. But 12 hours is about what they used. There's.
Did you tell me?
Carl didn't want to admit his thrashing, huh?
Well, he'll tell me that he thrashed, and he tells about it, but all I'm saying is he wouldn't say we were good thrashers, you know. He'd say, well, we thrashed.
Oh, hey, that's one thing I'll say. Carl and Oscar were two of the best around the country. There's nobody could beat them. I don't care where you went, who thrashed them. Now, John R. Johnson was out there in the ridge. He was a pretty good thrashman, too. But he couldn't come up to Oldham Boys. Neither could my brother-in-law's dad, Andrew Hawkinson. He couldn't come up to them.
Do they, does that mean that they got a lot more work?
Yes, and the job they done.
Mm-hmm. Were they much in demand then? Did people want them to?
Yes.
They had as much as they could handle then?
More than they could handle, really. You see, they used to take a little barrage and dry creek and up around Pleasant Hill and drain around. Well, then Jan R. Johnson started out there, and then Andrew Hawkinson bought a second machine. So he went out there, so then the Olsen boys took big barrage. So they went clean to lower end of big barrage. And then up on dry creek, and then they'd go up around by Avon, clean it back, come clean around by Pleasant Hill.
Hmm. When did this stuff end? What happened there to the thrashing? Why did it go out?
Well, they start in with these smaller machines, like the 28 and 26 needle gas tractors, and lots of people started doing tractors. Then, now Carl and Oscar, they got rid of their steam engine net, and they bought a small one, and a John Deere, or Case gas tractor. And the same with Albert. Robert owned one of them too, the last tractor.
Hmm.
And then the combines come in.
Carl told me that Robert really knew an awful lot about a lot of things. That Robert is the one in the family that he sort of singles out as being a guy that studied and knew things, especially about mining. Just about anything you'd ask him, he said he'd have an answer.
He took that course at university in mining. But when they come down to steam and machinery like thrashing, Oscar would take him there. See, when Oscar come in and started thrashing here, he ran Schaefer PF for potlatch up in Elk River.
That's right. I seen a picture of him.
Yeah. And then, so he knew all about steam then. And then he taught Carl to run the engine, and then he ran the separator. But as to them thrashing requires, there was lots of little. Fellow of an Avon over here had a little thrashing outfit. Oscar and Carl had one, and John R. Johnson had a thrashing outfit. Charlie Smith had two.
You know, another thing about the Olsons is from Carl, it just makes me think that those guys would be as honest as a day is long with any, you know, all the work they were doing. I mean, I would think that they'd really give people a lot for, you know, do the best they could. Really put out a lot of effort.
Yep, I'll tell you, that's one thing I say about Albert. He was kind of hot-headed, though. Robert and him, he said he'd go to Crowden the machine, Robert get after him for it.
What do you mean, Crowden?
Well, trying to shove too much grain through.
Oh,
it,
yeah.
You know. But Oscar, he took care of that, so Robert. Carl didn't have to say that because Oscar would tell him to shut up. He'd tell him, Carl, shut up. And Carl was holding about it, wasn't going, getting enough sacks, but Oscar told him to shut up.
Well, did you tell me that once that Carl, well, Carl's mentioned to me too, once he got really mad at his teacher and he quit school?
Mm-hmm. He got mad at Guy Kitch.
He got what?
He mad at Guy Kitch. Bud Kitch, you know him?
No.
He's a mechanical coalman. He used to live over here where the house is just this side.
Was this guy, this guy's father. It was his father, right? Mm-hmm.
The guy, but...
What did this guy do? Did he... Was he giving Carl a hard time? Or?
No, I don't know. They got in an argument there in school about something. Carl had a temper and blew up. And they got an argument there, and then Carl took his books and went home. I was there when it happened.
Is that the last time Carl went to school?
Mm-hmm. Last time he went to school. Mm-hmm. Guy tried to stop him, and he had a lace out of shoe string that carry books in, double that up and hit Guy with that.
Carl did?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then he told him that he was going, Guy tried to stop him, and he said, you can't stop him, and he was getting mad enough to answer Carl. Carl just took his books and left. Carl had a temper. Still asks if he gets an argument. You get a good argument with Carl, I see him get mad lots of times. He can't stand an argument, you know, he figures he's going to win. Mm-hmm. That's why. And now Oscar was absolutely the other way. I don't think you could cut an argument out of Oscar.
Well, Oscar, he died young, didn't he?
Yeah, he was young when he died. See what happened to Oscar riding them shades on them rough side spurs up there, shaking, and shook one kidney loose. In those days, they didn't know enough to operate. They got a kidney, so I think what it was cancer of the kidney. He died from suffered. Oh, boy, that man suffered. I'll tell you, I was up there and I seen him when he used great teeth, you could tell on him.
Greatest teeth, so what?
Great teeth.
Oh.
Yes, for the pain. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because we went up there, round here lots. He liked to play cards. We used to go up and play poker and rummy and different games. They'd draw all night till the next daylight. Pass time with him.
This when he was sick, eh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Where was he then? Was he still living in the home place?
Right across, you know where Danny McKenzie got his trail house? Well, just across the road, back on the hill there, was a cabin. That's the place that Carl and Oscar, well, Oscar bought that when he come out, and him and Carl farmed there. And then he got bad, so then they had to move in over there where Emil lives, the folks. That's where he died.
Did he have it for a long time before he finally died?
Oh, Oscar suffered for, must have been 3 years anyway. He suffered with that. Yeah. I forget just how old Oscar was, but he wasn't old when he died. He couldn't have been more than his 30s.
Do you remember the parents? Their parents?
Mr. Miss Wolf?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you say in the neighborhood. Yeah.
Seems like they raised quite a family.
Mm-hmm. They did. Oh, well, 12 children in the family. And off of them, no, it's two boys. Carl and Emil, and Ida, Annette, and Mabel, three girls, one girl dead.
Do you remember with the father, Mr. Olson, he worked, remember about his work and what he did?
Well, okay, he worked around the sawmill for the Troy Lumber Company. That's where he worked. Mm-hmm. You know, he was a sawmill man.
Which one of his sons was he like? You remember? I mean, if you were going to say, was he like, which one of the boys took after him?
Well, I don't know.
I'm just trying to know a little what he was like.
Olson, he was a good-natured guy, full of fun. He was a joker. Mm-hmm. Olson, he wasn't like Carl or Albert or any of them. No, I don't know of any of the boys that really. Axel, the oldest boy, Axel and Oscar, I guess, would be about the closest.
Well, you know, the other thing I wanted to ask you about, too, was about the way that the farming is changing. You were talking to me about some before, and I really got the idea that the way you see it, it's really ruining the land, the way they're farming. Now, why?
Well, if one thing, you can take this nitrate. You ain't putting but that little pellet in the ground. Well, we used to plow under clover, probably red clover that high, building up the soil. You filled the soil so it couldn't wash. You had something there, a green manure crop. I'll tell you, I raised on red clover, and that's what Emil Olson tell you too. We raised just some good wheat crops on red clover ground as they raised now.
Would you get the same kind of yield?
Well, all here without you know, I raised 60 bushel wheat on it. And we didn't have no gain wheat like we got now. We had that different kinds of wheat, 40-fold, and oh God, there were so many strains of wheat. But we never had no gain. If we'd had a gain wheat, we could have had our 80 bushel wheat too. Mm-hmm.
Well, now when you say
but that, I'll tell you, you see now when you plow, you don't see this little humus stringers in the ground.
The humus in the ground?
Yeah. You don't see that anymore after nitrate. Be just a little stringer, just like webs when you plowed.
You mean after you plowed, you'd
well,
see that?
You could see that in your furrow when your plow is going. You could see it. Well, you don't see that no more. That shows that your life, your fiber has gone out of the soil. And that ground, of course, we didn't dry plow like we do now, but that ground would turn up just like a nice garden.
You mean when you were...
When we plowed, yeah. When you plowed. You reached in clover. And like now, you take and go down now and see your ground. You go down 12 inches now. Look what you're turning up. A red, hard soil. Those days, it hadn't washed off. You had good, rich soil right down. I walked in further up to here. I had a footprint and had good soil.
You walked in soil up to halfway up to your knee? Mm-hmm.
Fall into footburner. Oh, we plowed. We plowed up to 14 inches.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, yes. This is shallow plowing like they use now, 8 inches. So they didn't believe in that no more.
And it was good soil, clear down.
Yes. And I can show you spots like around the south side of this field here, down on the curve down there, and over across on the field further over. It's rock. And we could plow 14 inches deep and never even know there was rock there.
What is it? What happened to the soil? Where?
Washed off. And then plowing down the hill all the time, plowing it off.
It washed off because it hasn't, it's got
well,
nothing
and then
to...
You just keep it plowing down the hill. Every time you plow 16 inches, say now you plow 16 inches wide and 8 inches deep. Well, you have turned that soil completely over. You don't set up an edge. All right, you know that's going to make it. And on a side hill, that probably go out there 20 inches. Well, that makes a thin soil. A year after year, plowing down off a hill that way, you're going to get a thin soil.
Well, how did you rotate it? Did you have a first grow a crop and then grow clover or fallow it, or how did you do it?
Well, we'd plow under our clover and then put that into fall wheat. And then probably go back with peas and barley, rotate it. You rotate it our farming. And then after I got my D4 in 49, then I got a hold of one of these big chisels. Them three, you seen, probably seen them, there's real chisel, what they call it. Them high beams, two, three. Well, I had three of them. And I went down 18 inches, broke up the bottom. And Stanley Hilliard said when he rented my place then when I quit in 62, he said he could tell the difference on plowing here than on his that hadn't been chiseled.
What was the difference?
Plow leisure. And you could see for years, I don't know, I suppose you could know, for years you could see where that chisel is. Once in a while you see a crack along there in the bottom of your furrow. And then I went around my heels this way, so it couldn't wash, it had to run right into it.
You sort of contoured it.
Contoured it good. Never to get anything that would where it could run. If I had a corner like over in this field over here, I'd go forth and back there till I got up far enough so I could go around the whole side here. And I done that every third year.
Every third year? You chiseled it?
I chiseled every third year. This place here, I don't think it's any of it that wasn't chiseled three times.
Do you think it helped hold the soil besides making it easier to plow, having chiseled it?
Right. You bet you, because that water went right down there, clean down to where the chiseling was. it couldn't go like you plow 8 inches now, on side door. The water comes in a spring to go down to that quad path, what you call a plow sole. Then it'll run there, then it gets the flood water and you just take that dirt with it. They couldn't do that with the shift. And then we plowed down the clover, you had all of that there to hold it.
When did they start with this fertilizing, the kind they're doing now?
Oh, they started in the... We didn't use it here till in the 50s. Late 50s. They started with it down in Walla Walla before, because Fred Greenville, he used to farm this place, so his old Fredman place. And he had a friend down there, a schoolmate, and he'd been using it, and he tried 3 different years to germinate clover on that nitrate ground and could get a germination. So that fella told him, he says, you use that, he says, you can't even start raising grass if you keep on flowing. Takes everything there is out of the soil. All you use is that pellet, dope. I'll tell you, when that first came out, I belonged to Soil Conservation since 1930. And we had a meeting up here at Hawkinson's, and there was many old stuff from Kendrick and Soren from Genesee were there. And then they told all of us there, well, he says, just like you get sick, you shot in the arm, you're worse off after it dies away. And that's what's going to happen to your nitrate, they told us.
They were telling you not to use it then?
Bet you they were again. It's against nitrate. Gosh. He used to come up here ever, or go through the country somewhere. He'd always stop in here.
What's his name?
Manny Onstott.
Manny Onstott?
He lives right across from the Kendrick Schoolhouse.
Is he, he's retired now?
He's retired. He's an old conservation man. Damn good one, too. Manning was good.
So you think it's the fertilizing that's really the cause of ruining them?
You take that and it's contour work. That's what they taught us, that not to plow around the field and work it down the hills and everything. Contour, seed contour. That's one thing that that's what they were for. And you see lots of that going on too now. People are getting more careful about their seeding.
Do you think they'd like your fields here are in a lot worse shape now than they were when you were?
They're played out from that nitrate, getting played out.
Can you see it?
You can tell it by how the ground works up, sure. It's hard. Ground's getting harder. And you take and go out now, like, well, go out on the lower end of Macaridian out that way, and go out to the Genesee. You see them hills. If you ever have a chance on some of that ground, you can find it just like pellet, just like it was gravel. That's what the soil starts getting like. It gets played out. And after that, you ain't got much left. Now there was a fellow by the name of Williams. He come from Kansas, and he was here in Moscow for 7 years, selling combines for farmer. And he went back there, and he come here that fall. And he said there was just a plot of 3 towns for dead, and the people had moved to Alaska and homestead. Couldn't raise a thing. You can't even germinate grass. And Stanley Hilliard, when his uncle and auntie died in eastern Montana, he went into western Minnesota, and he said it was the same thing over there, plot. Stanley can tell you about that. He told me. That's what it was. Finally, it'll die off. Well, you see, you've heard and read now about what happened in Africa after they took all that timber and that folio, where them people are starving. They can't raise anything there now. Took the vegetation off.
By the way, do you think that's why the creeks don't run here much anymore like they used to? Is it because they cut the timber off the hills?
That's absolutely it. Absolutely. This creek down here, Dry Creek, I could go down here and fish in a nice stream in July and August. There was running water here the year round. Come from Springs and that up in, clean up in White Pine. Same Bear Creek. Bear Creek was a good stream. Come clean back from Sand Mountain and Mica Mine. And that was all timber. Snow lay there till in June. Now what have you got? Now when it goes, it all goes at one time. I don't care how deep the snow falls. Get our spring a toss and rain and sun and you're out of snow. And nothing to feed it. No Bear Creek down here. I seen the times in August when Bear Creek would be as wide as across this room here. Dry Creek down here the same way.
That's so darn hard for me to, you know. I mean, I can see it, what you're saying, but it's so hard to imagine it, having never seen it myself.
No, if you haven't seen it, you wouldn't believe it. You wouldn't believe what difference it is now.
When did that start to happen? When did the creek start to go
out? Well, that started after they logged off Bear Creek, after they logged off all through Bear Creek, all the way from below Emil Olson, and clean up to Mica Mountain. And then log everything up here, clean up to the Mosca Mountain on this side.
You think it'll change again if the timber grows back?
Well, how are you going to grow back? Where they've been logging with these cats, there's nothing left. Have you ever been on the East Fork of Potlatch out of Bogle?
I don't think so.
Well, you go up there and see what's left. It used to be nice sand timber. Now they've logged it three, four times. And some of that they took down there, it's just one hill there, it's just bare. What they didn't take, they knocked over with the cats and skidding logs. Ollie, it's a fright to look at.
I've seen that kind of stuff. I've seen it. Mm-hmm. I've seen it up on near Ball Mountain where I was a lookout.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you take the same route, you go up, clean up to the upper basin of Elk River. Go east over clean to the North Fork out of Elk River. Go clean down south to the Clearwater. You've got the same thing. There. Park country back, park back, A.P. Lewis was. Just one little spot there on, if you leave back of park there, little standing timber, a white pine spot like this and dirt. But they'll be logging it pretty quick. Otherwise, it's getting nothing there.
Why do you think all that happened? I mean, do you think they just were ignorant of it, or they didn't care, or why? What?
Potlatch just wanted all the logs to get off of there, and they're logging. Not like with them cats, you know, you'd think about, well, you make a skidding road and go down. Well, you hook onto a tree here and you just take off wherever you want, right down through the timber. Let it fall ahead of you.
Now, when did they start logging on Bear Creek and all the way up to the mountain?
Was Bear Creek down here, when Potlatch came in with that, that was 1917. They logged down here. That's going back somewhere pretty good. But then, that was horse logging. That was different. You didn't run through the timber, you had a skidding road then. And that place over there in Park Country, Merton Pierce, he logged that with horses, and that's where that there stand the white pine is, and ain't much of it there, on Middle Creek. But you take down, go back in where they started in with these big cats, you don't see much left. And now them trees are standing, they can't take the wind. Lots of that, like the tamarack now, deer are starting to die.
Well, what's going on? It sounds like they're ruining the country.
Well, in Ohio, there's two to all blame, the state and the federal government. Why did they allow that to be happening on their land? That Potlatch take over, be the boss. Why? Why didn't they make them be careful about the logging? Now you hear about up there in Hell Canyon, They will make them do it with helicopter because they don't want to tear off the timber. Mm-hmm. But they should have made them be more careful with the cats not to run down the little trees like they did up there.
But you know, you got two. You got the first the woods, and then the farms too. It sounds like the soil is going to hell too. And yeah. You know, and you ruin the farms and you ruin the timber. What have you got left?
You ruin the timber for a watershed, and after that, there goes your farming with it. Mm-hmm. Now you don't see much good summer rains like we used to have. We have no moisture for it. Like last summer, look how dry and hot they got. Well, when I was a kid, and too many, many years after, although you didn't see that. Mm-hmm. You didn't see that they're hot like that. We had our thunderstorms, of course, but never no periods like we've been having lately. Get worse every year, it looks like. Now, you take our two last years, you know how, you've been around for 2 years, sure.
3 years.
All right. You've seen how it's been, dry and hot. And that, I'll go back at least 10 years or less, and it's a difference.
Well, how was it 50 years ago in the summer? Was it not so dry and hot as it is now?
It's way different, way different. I'll tell you, it's in June, or you could always look in the last part of May, June, when crops are wanting to have good rains. Mm-hmm. Mid-September, and 4th of July, always used to have good rains. Never missed.
Well, do you think that has something to do, not having rain, has got something to do with cutting the timber? Is that it, or?
Mm-hmm. Cutting the timber down? Well, you figure then, I told you about up here now, up in White Pine, Moscow Mountain. You could find snow there in the north slope there in June. Well, that was still feeding the streams, moisture in the air. Now, when there's no snow up there, there's nothing to get from in June.
Mm-hmm. Well, you really think that that moisture in the air itself helps cause the rain come?
Mm-hmm. Sure. And the streams now, like you take that Troy Creek, the one down here by Oak Hill Olson, the one Spring Valley, Dry Creek, Bear Creek, and all the Potlatch. All of them are running with water. You see, the sun has something to draw moisture from. Now it don't have it. Now Dry Creek was plumb dry last year.
Sure it did.
All but what was feeding from the spring down here, from the spring down, was some water.
You think that it's, you know, I was thinking that because our hills aren't as high, let's say they're, you know, what, they're only 4,000 feet, you know, and around there, as the ones are south of here, like off the Clearwater, south of Clearwater, where you got 8,000 feet, I suppose that would make a big difference, too. We don't have as much, it gets drier earlier around here, because our hills are a lot lower. You don't have the snow staying as late anyway.
Yeah. But you take, now you go in there, no, like after, in June and in July fishing. Well, up on Marble Creek, up and across there by Lost Lake, I know when we couldn't go in there last June on account of snow drifts. Now you can go in there on the dusty road. Mm-hmm. And Marble Creek, I'll tell you, Marble Creek was small last year. Surprising. Marble Creek knows how big. I seen Potlatch Creek down here, but Kendrick big and Marble Creek was.
You think going back to horse logging would be a good way to?
Well, some way to
help.
Be more careful in the woods. Mm-hmm. Either that or otherwise, with the cats, not to just go and hook onto a tree. Yes, you could now they got winch on all of them, winch them out. It says pulling them, going in there with the cat, and right through the small timber. Once when you have a chance, go up on East Fork out of Potlatch. Go clean up there to the divide that leads into Upper Basin. And then also out of Elk River, go on a diamond road down to where Bull's Cabin used to be. And you can just see for yourself just what it's like.
You told me the Indians kept this country burnt off.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like maybe they knew what they were doing.
I'll tell you, by God, there's more than one that'll agree with me that Indians took better care than we do. Where did they get these great big white pines up to 6 feet across there, and all this big pine timber that was here, taking care of the timber? No infestation. Now you can't grow a tree like that. It'll die before it gets that big.
So probably the burning kept the disease out.
Yeah, you betcha. And there was no like underbrush or small trees standing scrubbing underneath there. It was all burnt off.
I wonder how they burnt or when they burnt.
They burnt out in the summer when it good and dry. They set a grass fire.
Would they set it, would they set it down a ridge and burn up? Or?
Yeah, I'll tell you, they burned the whole country. They burned the whole country. This country, Dad said, was burnt all the way from here, clean up to north of Bowville and around. Well, it's just a grass fire, never gotten a big fire that way.
I wonder if there's any way to figure out when they stopped burning. And what about when they stopped? I suppose it was when your father came, they were still burning. So it probably stopped some not too long after.
Well, after the homesteaders got in here and the Indians got over on the reservation, that stopped it. After you drove them onto the reservation, and they wasn't traveling through. So that started quite a while back.
And what about the farming? What could you do about if you stop using fertilizer now, could you bring the soil back?
Well, you'd have to go back to, just like Donald Port was talking here today, the way fertilizer's getting so high priced, you're going to have to go back to Kroger or something. Try to do something else.
Did you tell me once that you could see the places where they're not, where it's not being farmed, where you can see the color of the grass as being different?
You can tell the difference on where you haven't used that fertilizer. If you had a place there, well, I'll tell you, I'll take my 2 acre garden here against a field that goes all around it, and I'll show you the difference. I'll show you what I got in the garden. I got good soil.
I've seen it.
Of course, that was from using straw manure and that on it, building up the ground. Now, I'm not thinking manure renting anymore. I don't know what it's going to be because it's going to run together on me. I want to figure it on, take off a piece of garden each year and put it into rape and plow under. Rape is a good thing to break up the soil. I seen rape roots. Oscar Hawkins had 7 acres up there, and he was plowing. He plowed 8 inches deep, and we took off a root that big at the bottom, that long, pulled out of the bottom. So that much as was, so you could figure that was over 20 inches long. Now that'll open up the bottom of the soil, and you take them little roots now, some of them are that big. When them rot up, there's something to build up.
That's probably about almost 2 inches around, eh? Yeah. 2 inches diameter.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's something you let that, get that thick in the ground. Oscar had said the fur for white when you plowed it. Well, all that to fill up the soil. Rape, I'll tell you, is as good a thing to build up soil with as anything.
They've only been using that lately, isn't it? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's a sheep to put a do it that Christ, it don't cost you nothing. Oscar, he burned 2 pounds an acre and paid 8 cents a pound, $16 an acre to seed it.
That's great. That's great.
Yeah. What a soil builder you get out of it too. And you put that in the fall and then you plow the next year. So you don't have to lay your ground over like you would with lots of other things, alfalfa for that. You got a 4 week ground next year again.
One other thing I want to ask you about was the cemetery on Dry Ridge here.
Mm-hmm.
Now I've heard, it's a beautiful place.
It is. It's supposed to be the nicest cemetery around the country. Well, now Norman Burge's folks, when they bought the hotel down here, run the hotel down there, They went on all Genesee and all Moscow and all over and left over and showed Dreyfus to be buried in. That's where they're buried. Norman folks. That was a pretty cemetery. So you can see outsiders come through, give it credit.
Do you know about when the cemetery got it going? Was it there when you were a little kid?
Oh, Jesus. That was going in the 1800s. God, I don't know when the first one was buried up there. But way back. And the graves up there that nobody knows anything about. Lost and forgotten. Now there's two next to the folks up there. Eddie Sorensen's got the book, and he sold that lot to Clarence Johnson when his father died. Dad told him not to take that lot because Master and Mrs. Melgren, the homestead, this place, sacred place right across the canyon. So when she died, she asked Dad to take care of their lot because the boy went back east. So we did it. Well, I did till I seeded it into grass. And they start digging down there, Morris Harlan, Dorsey, and dig. They come on one box and then they come on the other. So then Clarence had to buy a lot on the other side.
How come they didn't know that there was somebody buried there?
Should be in the book. Every lot is marked in that book. There's lots of it that's up there. There's several lost ones. They're going to find themselves finding boxes down there after a few years.
Mm-hmm. Well, now I've heard that it's hard to dig in the ground there too. Is that true?
Oh, you get down there towards the last of that grade there, you take a sharp pick and drive it as hard as you can. It'll stick on the end. You get about that much.
Is this all year round? It's hard to.
It's that way all the time. It's a blue hard pan.
Well,
now Blimka, he does pretty good with that dig machine. Okay, he does pretty good at it. But when you're going to do it by hand, boy, 4 men a day, you owe a car to dig a grave.
4 men a whole day?
Shaped around, 2 and 2.
Have you dug graves up there?
I'll say I have. Several, lots of them. And what we used to do, Carl Olson used to be with up there too, set a hole on there, 2 on the center, and 1 over here, and shoot them all at one time. You get a hole probably that big around, just open down through, and then in between you got to break it loose with the pick.
You mean you use dynamite?
Yeah, you can't shoot the whole grave. You shoot a hole here and there. Ain't gonna work the rest of it up, but that gives you a chance to pick against that then. I know it used to have edge, sharp edges. You know what they are, you often made logs.
Yeah.
I used to have that there and got it. Drive that here as hard as you can in like that. And then you had to take it off with your hand because it's stuck on the edge for the pick. It's sticky.
Is it true that in the summer you can see where people are buried sometimes?
Sure. Now it's dry as it was last fall. We was up there, and I forget who's up there. I showed them. I knew where they were buried. Mrs. Peterson, that's inside the portal, and then it's Mrs. Sandberg up here, her mother, and then it's Mrs. Cravey. You saw a place across the road. And then right down there across from my folks, it says Miss Yon Lindemann. It's just a green spot right there. You can just see a little bit of swale in the center of the drive. They're right in the middle of the driveway, so it's a gravel track on each side. It's a little short, little off the grave there, but you could tell last fall it's the size of the grave of greener. So there must be a gas coming up from the grave.
Is it, you can see his other places in the cemetery too, or just where it stays greener than
on the other, out here it's all mowed all the time. It's mowed.
So you can't tell there.
No, you can't tell there. The only ones I could tell was them gravestones.
The ones right on the road.
Mm-hmm. And you could stand at one end of some train, look up the road, and see it from city graves down through there like four. Now Lucille and I was up there, and I forget some other people up there. Then we start talking about that. And I know some of these, didn't know anything about that, but then I mentioned about who was buried there.
What do you think it is that does that the birds and those people find so beautiful about the cemetery? I think it's beautiful, but I'm wondering why it's so. Is it the trees that are there? And it's just something about it. It's lovely.
Well, I'll tell you. You take on Brecker Cemetery now. They used to have a lot of shade trees up there. Took them all out. That's all. Had some red firs up there. Some did. And took them all out here. Lilac bushes, another thing we dug out. Got them lilac bushes, you know, they push tombstones over and everything.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Easier on the people than any other bank could have been in there. Frank was, he took chances.
Well, does that mean that he was better to, mm-hmm. better to the people?
Yep, I'll say that for Frank. After you, if we don't have that, I will tell you something. I don't want no tape or something.
Okay, but tell me, I didn't get that. You really do think though that Frank has been the best man that.
That's what I say, Frank. It's the best one we've had in Troy.
Yeah. What about during the hard times in the depression? Did the bank help people?
Oh yes, that was Ole Bowman then. Mm-hmm. He helped the people.
Yeah. What?
So?
Yeah, I guess I should get going.
Well, you go up and see Otto Osterberg and you won't get...
Frank?
Frank Brocky, I'll tell you, done a lot for the people.